This is not our first Christmas when we are in what many people are referring to now as a post-Christian era. It's been for some time now that term, post-Christian era, has been used to designate the time in which we're living. And we are no longer surprised now by cities, nor organizations, nor individuals wanting nativity scenes to be removed and any reference to Christmas being removed. There's an ongoing battle, especially in our area of the country, where to respond to Merry Christmas is almost a challenge and a statement of your affiliation or your thoughts as to whether you respond to that with Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays. And it's kind of an ongoing battle thing that is occurring among us in this time and in this age that is fast becoming what is known of as post-Christian. Christian, what does that mean? Christian. Let's take a look at it, and I want us to look at some verses, and I'm going to put those up on the screen, not the verses in their entirety, but some of them. And I want us to look at in which we are, and it's not the first time we've gone through it. And if Jesus delays his return, it will not be the last. There are periods of time when this occurs, and what it does is calls us back to taking a look at the Bible again, and taking a look at Scripture, and making decisions about ourselves and about who we are and about what we will think. There are a lot of people who are accusing Christians of being the very problem that is causing our country to be in the shape that it's in. And that the only way that our country can be straightened out and can regain the freedom that, or rather not regain the freedom, but to have the freedom that people in our world today desire to have is for Christianity to be removed. And so Christianity has become and is going to become the enemy for a number of different reasons. Christianity is blamed for the prejudice of the world. Christianity is blamed for what is referred to as the number one sin in our country today. And the number one sin in our country today is intolerance. And not being tolerant of others, not being tolerant of what others think, not being tolerant of others' religions is what is despised and hated about Christianity. And that being the reason why Christianity needs to be removed in order for those things to not take place. And there's a lot of us, a lot of individuals, who when they hear these charges against Christianity, do not want to be associated with those charges. They do not want to be thought of as prejudicial. They do not want to be thought of as intolerant. And when we look at ourselves, we don't consider ourselves intolerant. And we don't consider ourselves prejudicial. And because of the charges that are leveled against us, we want to withdraw ourselves from those charges and not be a part of them. And that's where we need to be careful. And that's where we need to make sure that we are thinking. And it's going to cause us to take another look at what the Bible has to say. So let's kind of go through this, and let's look at it in this way. Christian, if I can get my little thing to work. My little button is a no-go. There we go. You got it for me? So I'm just going to give you the little hand signal when I get ready. Christian, first place. That's going to annoy y'all to death, isn't it? I'll tell you what, just put the whole screen up. We'll go through it like that. Well, and I'll tell you the next time we want to do. Acts chapter 11 and verse 26 is the first of the three places in the Bible where the word Christian is used. It's a unique word. And the way it is spelled out in English is letting you know almost exactly how it's pronounced and said in the Greek language. The Messiah is Christos, and Christos is the word that stands for Christ. And you add a different ending to it, eon, Christian, and you get the word Christian. And the Bible will tell us in Acts chapter 11 and verse 26, and the disciples were first called Christians in Antioch. And there's a great deal of discussion and debate and a great deal of uncertainty as to in what sense were they called or who did the calling when they were called Christians first in Antioch. Is this a term that they were called by their enemies? A term that was intended by the enemies to be a statement that would create embarrassment for them, or a statement that they intended to use as kind of a statement of shame? Or is it a word that is given by God? And the key for that second part is the word called. The word called can be simply defined as something you are called in a very general way. But what a lot of people notice is that a number of times in the Bible, when God calls someone something, when God designates a name, the particular word that is used in Acts 11:26 is the word that is used. And as a matter of fact, some of the Greek dictionaries will say something called by God or an inspired name. And that's led a lot of people to believe that it was God who designated, probably through the Apostle Paul, that the name Christian would be the name that the followers of Jesus Christ would be known by. And there's that argument on that side. But then you have the other two references where Christian is used. And a case can be made in those two verses that it was a name being used by the enemies of Christianity. A name to be used to sort of intend to embarrass them or intend to label them as something that they might not like. But guess what? The Christians didn't mind it. And it becomes from the very beginning a term that is not to be shunned, that is not to be run from. They are happy to be identified with Christ. They are happy to be identified with what that name, Christian, means. But it's first used with regard to the Christians in the city of Antioch in chapter 11, verse 26. Agrippa, a man who is being preached to by Paul, a man who understands Jesus Christ and all the things that have taken place. And Paul, knowing that he understands and knowing his heart, thinks that Agrippa might be an individual who's open to the message. And so the Apostle Paul, while in prison in Jerusalem, soon to be sent to Rome, is preaching to Agrippa. And Agrippa responds to Paul, "In a short time you will persuade me to become a Christian?" And I read that like a question, because a lot of the translations that we have today make it a question and assume that it is a question that Agrippa is stating. Maybe not so much a statement of, "Paul, you're almost to persuade me to be a Christian," but rather a statement to Paul more along the line of, "Do you think that in such a short time you can make me a Christian?" And Paul says, whether it takes a little while, a short time, or a long time, "I would to God that everyone that is listening to me talk right now would become exactly what I am, except for these chains. I would to God that every person would be a follower of Christ." And it's the term Christian that Agrippa uses, not Paul. But Paul doesn't run from it. And Paul is happy to have it and happy to be associated with Christ. And the use of it here is what gives individuals the idea that in 11:26 it might have been the enemies who used the term Christian. It simply means one who identifies completely with Christ. It means to adhere to. Adhere. That's when you've glued something to something else. You're stuck to it. You're glued to him. You are glued to Christ in every aspect and in every situation. The next verse word is used, we're going to look at it before we look a little further at the definition, is in the book of 1 Peter chapter 4. That's our reading, and I want you to turn back and read with me. And we're going to look at just two of the verses. We're not going to read the entire reading again. But in the book of 1 Peter chapter 4, the Apostle Peter writes this way. If you are reviled, if you're made fun of, if you're insulted for the name of Christ, is he talking about being called Christian? I don't think that's entirely in his mind. I think he's talking about whatever actions may come your way in a negative way, whatever negative actions may come your way because you belong to Christ. If you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed. Why? Because the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. Now that can be misunderstood. And it is often misunderstood. And so Peter very quickly adds this to that verse. Make sure that none of you suffers as a murderer or a thief or an evildoer or a troublesome meddler. Now, I can understand murderer, and I can understand thief, and I can understand an evildoer. But who is this troublesome meddler? Literally, it's the person who puts himself over the affairs of other people. Literally, it's the person who sets themselves up as the judge of the rightness and the wrongness of what other people are doing. And they do so, evidently, in the name of Jesus. You ever ran into those people? Who think it is their duty from God to tell everybody else what they're doing wrong. They never look at themselves. They never think about themselves. But it's their duty from God to make sure I straighten everybody else out. You see, Peter understands that folks who do that will think and will say, I'm being persecuted for the name of Christ. No, you're being persecuted because you're a busybody. I'm being persecuted for the name of Christ. No, you're being persecuted because you stuck your nose where it ought not to be and somebody knocked it off. I'm being persecuted for the cause of Christ. No, you're being persecuted because you're a liar and a thief or a murderer. So there is a big if to what Peter says here. If you are being persecuted because you are a Christian, if you are being persecuted because you are being what Jesus would have you to be, if you are actually following Christ, then you are blessed. And when you are following Christ, then the Spirit of God and the glory of God and the truth of God rest upon you. And they know that you are speaking where Jesus speaks. And you are being what Jesus is. It's not just any sufferer. It's not just anyone who gets into trouble because of their relationship with other people. And there's a big if here. A lot of people suffer, and it's not because they're being Christian. A lot of people have folks that are mad at them, and it's not because they're being Christian. But if you suffer as a Christian, and that's a big if, then you are blessed. And then the Apostle Peter will go on and say, if anyone suffers as a Christian, being like Christ, adhering to Christ, being stuck to Christ. If anyone suffers as a Christian, he is not to be ashamed, but he is to glorify God in this name. We need to be careful about what we are allowing the world to use to shame us. And we need to be careful about whether or not we ought to feel ashamed. But let's look first at this. What does it mean to adhere to Christ? What does it mean to be a Christian? What does it mean to be stuck to Christ? Jesus gives two definitions. He gives more than that, but he gives two that I think are important for us to look at. The first one is in Matthew chapter 10. Not only is this something that Jesus tells us that we are to be like in order to adhere to him, Jesus says, if you are not this way, you are not mine. If you are not this way, you do not belong to Christ. Matthew chapter 10, starting with verse 32, Jesus will say this. Therefore, everyone who confesses me to say the same thing. That's what the word confess means. The word confess means to say the same thing. So if anyone does not say the same thing as me about who he is and about what he said. Therefore, everyone who confesses me before men, I will also confess him before my Father who's in heaven. But whoever denies me refuses to say what Jesus said. Whoever denies me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is in heaven. To adhere to Christ means to say what he said. It means to do the things that he did. It means to live the life of the Christian, which means to allow Christ to live in me. I'm no longer alive, Paul said, yet I am. But my life, living for myself, was nailed to the cross. And it's no longer I that live, but Christ lives in me. And the life that I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. That's what Jesus is saying. You confess me, but if you deny me, if you're ashamed to strive to be like me, and if you're ashamed to strive to say what I say, then I will be ashamed of you in my Father's kingdom and when we get to heaven. Next verse is Mark chapter 8. Mark chapter 8 verse 38 says the same thing, but it focuses more on the words. And so in Mark chapter 8 and verse 38, Jesus will say this, helping us with the definition of Christian, one who adheres to Christ. It says this, for whoever is ashamed of me and my words. Whoa. You know, it's an interesting thing to think about and to consider that Jesus is the Word who became flesh and dwelt among us. And so Jesus will say, whoever is ashamed of me and of my words. You see, that brings it away from being ashamed of the idea of Jesus. Whatever your idea of Jesus might be, he brings it down to whoever is ashamed of me and of my words. In this adulterous and sinful generation. Boy, he gets really down to it now when he says, whoever is ashamed of me and my words in a church building where everybody else holds to the same thing. That's not what he's saying. Whoever is ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation. That means the college campus. That means the high school campus. That means the streets. That means the workplace. That means wherever you are with the world. Whoever is ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will also be ashamed of him when he comes in the glory of his Father with his holy angels. Christian, I'm not ashamed of him and I'm not ashamed of his words. And no matter what may come my way because of him and his words, I am blessed. Because the likeness of Christ and the words of Christ rest upon me and are on my tongue. Take these one at a time with me, okay? Which I know that means you're going to run straight down all of them, but once you've done that, go back to the top. It's no longer a popular thing to be a Christian. And now the challenge is really coming to us, and it's going to become more and more a challenge. And we don't want to be identified with the things that the world hates. We don't want to be called all the things that the world is thinking of its idea of Christian. We don't want to be considered prejudicial. We don't want to be considered intolerant. We don't want to be considered any of the things that the world is looking at when it says you are our enemy and you must be destroyed. And the problem with us is the problem of throwing out the baby with the bathwater. Most of y'all have no idea what that refers to. When Larry and I were younger, and we would spend the night at my grandparents' house, especially our grandparents on my dad's side, Grandma and Grandpa Spivey. Grandma and Grandpa Spivey did not have a bathroom, period. To make matters even worse, Grandma and Grandpa Spivey didn't even have an outhouse. They had a barn. I will go no further. But when it came to taking a shower, you didn't take a shower unless it was raining. Or if you want to take a garden hose and hang it up in a tree, you could take a shower. But nobody did that because it was cold water. Instead, what we would do, we would take a big wash tub and we would fill it up with water early in the morning. And then we would go and do the work and whatever else we were going to do all day long and let that wash tub set out in the sun so the sun could warm it. And then at night, when the sun had gone down and nobody else could see you, then you went outside and you took a bath in the tub. And when you had taken your bath in the tub, and if Larry and Gary were with me, the three of us, because, you know, you didn't want to get rid of the warm water, you'd take turns in the bathtub until everybody had washed, and then you would throw out the water. If you had a baby, you warmed the water in the house, maybe on the stove or something, and you had a little pan, and you washed the baby in the sink or on the kitchen table in this pan of water. And when you finished, you would open the door and you would throw the water out the door. And the expression came about of, you don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Because there's something you want to get rid of. That's the dirty water. There's something you don't want to get rid of, and that's the baby. And so the expression throwing out the baby with the bathwater comes about to warn us that you need to be careful what you want to avoid. You need to be careful what you don't want to identify with. You need to be careful what you want to get rid of. Because you might be getting rid of the baby. You might be getting rid of the thing that is vital. So you got to be careful. It calls for judgment. It calls for discernment. It calls for knowing what's important and what's not. And you got to be careful that you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Do you know there are things Jesus said that the world hates? Do you know that there are things Jesus said that draw the lines? There are things that Jesus said that show intolerance. There are things that Jesus says that sow a form of prejudice. And this is it. John chapter 14 and verse 6. Jesus said to him, that's Thomas, this is at the Last Supper. This is the night he is going to go to the Garden of Gethsemane and spend the rest of the night on trial and being beaten, and then being beaten the next morning, and then being put on the cross. And Jesus said to them, you know where I'm going and you know how to get there. And Thomas said, Lord, we don't know where you're going. How do we get there? And he also said to Thomas, also said to him, show us the Father and we'll be happy. And Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. That is the heart of what the world hates about Christianity. Look at the lines. Look at the limitation. Look at the absoluteness. The way it is translated in English is exactly the way it's written in the original language. Jesus did not say, I am a way. That would take away so much of the feeling of intolerance and prejudice that the world has toward Christians. If Christians would just acknowledge that they are a way, one among many. But that would be denying what Jesus said. That would be denying the truth of the Bible. That would be denying Jesus. The word thee is there. Jesus does not say, I am a way. He says, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Look at the line that is drawn. I've heard it said, and I read it in a couple of different articles this week, where individuals were writing about different religions, and the two religions that come to mind are Islam and Judaism. And what they state about that is that all of us Christians need to understand that they worship the same God we do. All right, I'll grant that. But do they believe Jesus is the Son of God? Because Jesus here isn't just talking about believing in the God of Abraham. What Jesus says here is nobody goes to the Father, the God of Abraham, unless he comes through me. The line that is drawn. And so these words that the world so much hates and despises us for, and will use in order to describe us as being intolerant, insufferable. Individuals who draw a line, individuals that are separatist, individuals that are so prejudiced against the thoughts and minds of others. No, it's not that. We just hold to what Jesus says, and we know this to be true. And so what we're doing our very best to do is to bring everyone to Jesus, who is the only way of salvation and who is the only way to God. And the entire Bible is written in order to prove that. And there is one specific book in the Bible that spends every page of itself to explain why he is the only way. And we're studying that book this quarter, and it's the book of Hebrews. We studied it last quarter, and we're studying it again this quarter. And that's what that book does, is to explain to us why. So we are Christian. We belong to Christ. We adhere to Him. We hold to His Word. And it is a far more serious thing to do than a lot of people like to acknowledge. Because so many want to be more and more like the world rather than holding on to exactly who Jesus is and what he said. Are you a Christian? Do you belong to Christ? Are you stuck to him? Have you been washed in his blood? Do you need to come home to him? If you need to respond to his invitation this morning, we offer it to you. As together we stand and as we sing.